Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
There's a podcast that's called Host of Generation Anxiety. It's aimed at millennials, and it recently featured an episode that was called Generation Anxiety. And in it, the sponsors entreated, "You feel that you have inherited the apocalypse? Are you anxious because you feel like the world is ending?" Their answer was, "Well, the good news is you aren't crazy," and it definitely is. Now, there's a joke that Adam and Eve were leaving the Garden of Eden after being expelled by God, and both were deeply, as you can imagine, discouraged. But for a try at ameliorating their anxiety, Eve turns to Adam and she says, "Well, just look at it this way, Adam. We're experiencing another one of life's major transitions. The transition that we are facing today, I think, is nothing less than that. And as I suspect it was for Adam, it may be hard for us to feel soothed. Will we be able, we may ask, to create a new interconnected world based upon the human values that we cherish? Or will we descend into a more troubling place? We don't know for sure. We are entering the unknown. We may feel like the passengers on this recent plane flight." The captain came on, the speaker. He says, "This is your captain speaking. I have some good news and I have some bad news. The good news is that we are ahead of schedule. The bad news is our navigation equipment is failing. We don't know where we're going." Everything we know is like passengers on that plane experience speeding up, and we don't know where it will all end. We are facing changes culturally, economically, and spiritually that are as significant as those we face with the discovery of fire, the invention of the wheel, domestication of animals, or the development of agriculture. We have left behind the Holocene age in which we have lived for the past 10,000 years and are entering what is now coming to be called the Anthropocene age, the age where humans are the master. The changes that we are experiencing began with the Industrial Revolution, but now that mechanical technology has matured into information technology. Information technology has spawned what writer Joel Barrow refers to as the GRIN technologies. I don't think he says it necessarily with a smile, but it's his acronym. That is, fields of genetic engineering, robotics, artificial intelligence, and nanotechnology. Barrow writes, "These four advances are intermingling and feeding on one another and are collectively creating a curve of change unlike anything we humans have ever seen before." As a result, many scientists, Stephen Hawking among them, have now begun to predict that sooner or later, artificial intelligence may supplant our species. And they're serious. More unsettling, the rate of change is increasing. So if you feel a little uncertain these days, you have some reason. Computer power doubles approximately every 2 years, It establishes an exponential curve. To understand the result of doubling, just imagine that one day the gates of Yankee Stadium open at 11 o'clock a.m. and one person trickles in. Then in the next minute, two arrive, and then in the next minute, four. And the numbers double every moment, every minute. How long do you suppose it would take to fill the stadium halfway? Any guesses? Well, the answer is 59 minutes it would take. How long would it take to fill the statement in the completely? The answer is 1 minute. We don't realize the impact of exponential growth. We don't realize that we have a problem, unfortunately, until the last minute. Albert Bartlett, who is emeritus professor of physics at the University of Colorado, has pronounced, "The greatest shortcoming," he says, "of the human race is our inability to experience the exponential function." Also, if this isn't enough so far, we're in the midst of a monumental negative feedback loop. Our degrading environment encourages us to seek ways for living artificially, away from all the toxins and natural disturbances that are around us, and encourages us to live in a virtual world. At the same time, the more we accustom ourselves to living in a virtual world, the less familiar we become with the natural world, and so we care less and less about preserving it. So, if you don't feel a bit off-center today, you're probably not quite aware. Now, of course, we could blame God for all our troubles. That was our old means for blame and hope. There's that saying that many of you are familiar with, "God laughs while you're making plans." This saying may be a rendition of Psalm 33:10 that reads, "The Lord brings the counsel of the nations to nothing. He frustrates the plans of the peoples." But then in this verse, the sentiment was meant to illustrate that God's correction of the people's ill plans. However, my intentions, like yours, are very often good, and I don't like them to be laughed at, not even by God. And I'm becoming more compassionate than ever since reading about an announcement about God and his labor by the Reverend Jeffrey Henry Jurgens, who is a doctor of divinity at Yale Divinity School. As well as being a doctor of divinity, Dr. Jurgens is also a practicing psychiatrist. Reverend Dr. Henry Jurgens recently held a news conference where he announced that he has analyzed God and found that he is suffering from bipolar disorder. He writes, "Sometimes he's up and sometimes he's down. Sometimes he punishes and sometimes he rewards." Jurgens illustrates God's wild mood swings by an example of a friend. She just got married. He was looking forward to a new life, and the next day, due to heavy rains, her home flooded and floated away. On the other hand, there was another friend who got mugged in Central Park, but as a result, God gave him the winnings of a large lawsuit, and now he spends his whole life playing golf. Jurgens is sympathetic with God's problem. He decided to form a support group for all of humanity, as he put it, to get together and discuss our feelings. He probably doesn't know about Unitarian Universalism, or he may have advantaged himself of our perspective already. He strongly urges everyone to forgive God, for he says, "He knows not what he does." Perhaps we can be a little encouraged by remembering that there was a previous time in history where the world seemed to become unhinged. Philosopher Carl Jaspers refers to this time in history as the Axial Age. It ran from the 8th century to the 3rd century BC. In India, enlightened sages produced the Upanishads. The Buddha began his search for the end of suffering. In Greece, Socrates and his pupil Plato questioned the meaning of life. The Hebrew prophets arose to challenge the course of Israel. China produced Confucius and Lao Tzu. Iran produced Zarathustra. And then around 30 AD, Jesus of Nazareth, sorry about that cough again, enjoyed and began his ministry. The times that he lived in made the ministry of Jesus and his followers receivable. The times then were apocalyptic. Nearly every Jew believed that the end of the world would likely come in their lifetime. This desperate uncertainty provided an opening in which the radical views of Jesus could speak and be heard. Jesus proclaimed absolutist values that would have been utterly dismissed at another time. He preached values that turned the entire system upside down, such as loving your enemy, really? Favoring the reign of the poor? What about all of those who are rich and self-made? Preaching that the least shall be first? We should try this sometime when we're waiting for the New Jersey Transit delay during the Amtrak repairs. He speaks a radical message which was available to be heard because of the upset of the times. Today, like those times, many of us feel lost and abandoned. We're looking for a new message. In place of that, conspiracy theorists abound. Instead of finding a new message, rage grows from personal to become righteous. Those who are alienated without a message, especially younger people, tend to join gangs or attach themselves to frightening idealistic movements. Members of political parties believe that they no longer are just fighting for a different view, but to save civilization. I too believe that I am fighting for civilization. But what I strive for is different. I believe in inclusion, not exclusion. My message is vulnerability, not invincibility, and the ability to live with uncertainty rather than the search for security. If apocalyptic times tempt us to divide ourselves into right and wrong, the saved and the unsaved, the just and the unjust, they also open us to the fact that we are all in this together. As the Buddha, a metaphor from Buddhism very beautifully states, at one lifetime or another, every one of us has been everyone else's mother, father, sibling, oppressor, and oppressed. So we have the responsibility to proffer extraordinary kindness. As in the time of Jesus, it is time for us to experiment with extremes, to provide extreme generosity, to risk extreme doubt, to act with extreme care. And of course, this isn't easy. There was a mother that I heard about who was preparing, she was preparing pancakes for her sons, Kevin, 5, and Ryan, 3. And the boys, they began to argue over who was going to get the first pancake. She remembered that the day before, their religious education lesson was about the ethics of Jesus. So she followed up with what she saw as a very teachable moment. She asked Kevin and Ryan, said, if Jesus were sitting here, you know what he would say? He would say, let my brother have the first pancake. I can wait. Immediately, Kevin turned to his younger brother and says, Ryan, you be Jesus. These ethics are not easy. But what we can be certain of is if in these times we are willing to take risks, to provide extreme generosity, to risk new doubt, and to act with unusual care, we may be on the right direction. We can be certain that if in every moment of our lives we can know that we can be open to wisdom, kindness, and compassion, if we can be so certain, we will not have to worry so much about what comes next. We will be on the right course. The future will take care of itself. The truth is, we've always lived with uncertainty. None of us truly knows whether we will be around tomorrow or whether the train will derail or whether we may fall or positively whether we may turn our whole life around and become a new person tomorrow. It is not easy to live in these times, but it is more advantageous to live than it is in times of peace. Advantageous for these reasons, because now we are prodded more than ever before to become fully alive, fully awake, and fully aware of our inner strengths. We are prodded to become spiritual folks. Mythologist Joseph Campbell put it this way. He says, we are not ever seeking the meaning of life anyway. What we're seeking always is the experience of what it's like to be alive. In nature, wildlife always thrives at the edges. The creatures, the new fauna, become alive between the meadow and the woods. We are at this in-between place. We live, though, where we have always lived, in the middle of the mess. And we can live as humans always have been able to live, with joy and comfort. May we stay centered in this time. May we risk the truth of these times. May we be gentle and kind. May we be prodded into a spiritual renewal and awakening. We have been sleepy for so long. A fellow meditator I heard about used to fall asleep while he was doing his meditating, but he had a very wise teacher. The teacher set him up to meditate in a different location. He moved him from a zafu in the meditation hall and perched him on a narrow wall of a deep well. My friend reports that he suddenly became fully awake. We are somewhat in this position. The words of the Zen liturgy remind us, let me respectively remind you that life and death are of supreme importance. Time passes swiftly and is lost. Each of us should strive to awaken, awaken. Take heed. Do not squander your life or this time. We are all called, I believe, to take extreme measures because the odds are extreme. We are called to become individual bodhisattvas. May we take their vow. Creations are numerous. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Truths are boundless. I vow to perceive them. The enlightened way is unsurpassable, and I vow to embody it.